All right, come on. This is the fifth story, and it's about what to do before you kick people out of church. Okay. You want to know that, don't you? Is there anybody on your list? Okay. Or are you on somebody else's list? All right. So I think, and I could be wrong, but I believe that this particular story is about going to court. It's about going to a Jewish court. So, which they had, and they still do. The Sanhedrin still meets in Jerusalem, and they decide things. They decide interesting things. One of the things that they decided was how to deal with the problem of Holocaust goods. Who owns the goods, the property of the people who were died in the Holocaust? Who inherits it? And we could have a whole Sunday about that. That's fascinating. But so in this particular story is part of Matthew's story. And Matthew, he's telling this gospel, this is his story. And Matthew was born a Levite. All the other gospels refer to him as Alphaeus, son of Levi. But he refers to himself as just the tax collector. So, and that had all kinds of implications that you and I can't quite connect to because we're not Jewish. And more importantly, we are not from the time of Second Temple Judaism. And Second Temple Judaism was that space between the destruction of the first temple by the Babylonians, the restoration, the return of the exiles, the building of another temple, and followed by the building of Herod's temple and resumption of sacrifice. There's 400 years in there between that time and Christ. And that whole time, the Jewish people were expecting the emergence of a Messiah. And he would be a political Messiah. And he would take over. And he would kick the bad guys out. And put the Jews in charge. And they were waiting. So this is the reasonable expectation of the disciples. That Jesus had to manage. Because he was going to Jerusalem, as they expected, and he would be king, as they expected. But he was going to die, which was not what they expected. Because they thought that if Jesus gets to be king, then they get to be prime minister, secretary of defense, treasury, secretary of the treasury, yada, yada. And so they were really pumped about this. And they never could get over that or get around that until after Christ was resurrected. So this is something that colors all of the trip to Jerusalem and what's going on here. So Christ tells them these stories. He's trying to get them in the mindset of what's about to happen, which is not what they expected, or anybody else, for that matter. So, Matthew is the resident tax and legal expert of the disciples. I did not see that chosen, but I think they portray him as sort of a high-functioning autistic, an obsessive-compulsive guy. And so one of these days I'll get around to seeing it. I identify very strongly with those characteristics. So, Christ has already told them who he is. They thought they'd personally benefit. And when they asked him, who is the greatest among us? And that's really what sets this whole thing off. Later, when he answers this question, who is the greatest? He says, he who would be the greatest among you must become your slave. Now, that was a very pointed reference. Because there was only one way to become a slave to another Jew if you were a Jew. And that was if you owed money and had no means to pay it, you could be sold. So that's what Christ was identifying with. someone who had owned a huge debt that they could not pay, and they were sold. And the Old Testament even talks about where parents sold their children, were forced to sell their children to pay debt. Now, what Christ is getting to here, and each one of these stories has this element, is the substitution, that he's coming to pay a debt that we owe, that we could never pay. So he's an example. He's being an example, and he says, I will be like a slave. I will be like, if you want to be the greatest, you must be like me. You must become like a bondservant, somebody who had nothing left to pay their debt. And we'll see in the next couple of, in the last Sunday that we have, he wraps this up, and he drills this idea in, and we'll talk about it then. But so just the stories that we just heard, where we hold about the story of the coin in the fish's mouth. And remember what happens is that the tax collectors come and ask Jesus, ask Peter, not Matthew the tax collector, they ask Peter the question, do you pay this temple tax? Well, the temple tax was not an ordinary tax, as we discussed. It was a redemption price for each individual of Israel. It was one half a shekel. And not paying this would have brought a plague down on Israel several times. So now Jesus was paying that when they asked him to pay the tax. Remember, he tells Peter, go to the first fish you see and reach in his mouth, and you'll find a coin. It'll be exactly enough to pay the tax for you, Peter, and for me, Jesus, and go pay it. So here's hint number one. Somebody's getting ready to redeem you. They're not going to put you in charge. They're not going to Jerusalem to put you in charge. They're going to redeem you because you have a debt that you cannot pay. So that was first hint. Then the next story has to do with becoming like a child. Well, what's characteristic of a child in a Jewish court? They can't testify. Cannot testify. They cannot incur a debt. They cannot pay a debt. So, what happens? And the millstone story that we came to, that seemed kind of random, right? If you offend one of these little children, you'd be better off with a millstone around your neck and throw him into the sea. Well, what they would have thought of is that a millstone was one of the things that you could not sell to collect the debt. Because, as Moses taught, it was like taking somebody's livelihood, like starving them to death. So you can't take their millstone. So this is almost like a joke. It's like, okay, this guy owes me money he can't pay. I can't take his millstone. So I'll just hang it around his neck and push him off the dock. That's what he's saying. Something that you couldn't pay. All right, you have your exemption. We have exemptions today. If you owe money and you go to court, then the first thing that the hill that the creditor has to climb is that you have to that you have certain things that cannot be sold, cannot be taken from you. And we refer to somebody who is in that state where they don't have any assets that can be reached. We call that judgment proof. Did you get a judgment on? Yes, I see that. And they can't, and there's no way to collect it. But in a Jewish court, there were still restrictions. You couldn't take the millstone. You couldn't take their coat or their clothes unless you gave them back to them at night so they wouldn't freeze to death. Then you could go back the next morning and get them. That's judgment proof. No, who would do that? But what you could do is you could sell them into personal slavery. And that's what Jesus was talking about becoming your slave. So, and we're going to come next week to this question of creditors who forget that they are also debtors. That is very much at the center of Micah 6:8, that God has shown you what is good, that you will do justice, love mercy, walk humbly. The limits of justice and mercy, the expression of humility, the idea that I owe something I cannot pay, and I've been forgiven. We'll come to that. Okay. Matthew 18, let's just look at 15 to 17. That's what we're going to talk about. If your brother sins against you, go and show him his fault. Just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you've won your brother over. If he will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, let him treat him as you would a Gentile, pagan, or a tax collector. I tell you the truth, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I tell you, if two of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. Where two or three come together in my name, there I am in the midst of them. Two witnesses. That sounds like court to me. Of course, to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So, and I did have a hammer, and this does look like a nail. So we don't need two witnesses, but we need competent witnesses. And a lot of the rules that govern what can be admitted in court as evidence and what can't are very similar to the Jewish rules. I mean, I suppose that's where we got them. So we go into court to collect the debt. There's exemptions, the millstone, judgment proof, and that the Jewish courts could force a sale. Now, debts were due on demand. You could either, as the rabbi said, you could go into the wilderness and confront somebody, and then the debt would be immediately become due. So they didn't owe interest. Jews didn't owe interest to other Jews. So it wasn't like something that would stop the accrual of interest or something like that, like we would be concerned about. But it did mean that that was it. You owed the money, you had to pay right then. So it was logical to first go to this person and say, do you have this money that you owe me? And then they say, no, or I don't owe you, or whatever. And then you bring two people with you, and you ask, I'm asking you a second time, are you going to pay this money or not? You bring two witnesses. And if that doesn't work, you got to go to court and bring your witnesses. Now, Deuteronomy 19:15 says this. When do you work with you? Reading this. Let me go find it. Friend, we need to buy you a new Bible. This is terrible. Do you ever need it? Someone needs to get Fran's Bible rebound for her. That'd be a good birthday present. This is a very sentimental Bible. It's good. It's a good Bible. I don't want you to read it. I can't read that thing. What are you talking about? That's crazy. Okay. One witness is not enough to convict a man accused of any crime or offense that they have committed. Matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. The disciples would have known, and he's just quoting out of the Old Testament. We don't know this because we're not Jewish, but that's what he did. And he does it all through the New Testament, and so does Paul. If you really want to know what's going on, go on the internet and look at the Jewish Encyclopedia and start poking stuff in that you see in the Old Testament and the New Testament, and all kinds of little lights will come on for you. It's fun. Okay. If a malicious witness takes the stand to accuse a man of a crime, the two men involved in the dispute must stand in the presence of the Lord, who are the priests and the judges who are in office at the time. Remember what happened with the woman taken in adultery? He said, "Where are your witnesses?" That meant that they had to admit that they were there when whatever happened. And all of a sudden, they just kind of melted away. So, the judges must make a thorough investigation. If the witness proves to be a liar, giving false testimony against his brother, then do to him as he intended to do to his brother, the punishment that you would have suffered had the false fact been proven is now visited upon the accuser. You must purge the evil from among you. The rest of the people will hear of this and be afraid, and will never again will such an evil thing be done among you. Show no pity. Life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. That's where this comes from. It's not some random Old Testament cruelty. It was the seriousness of appearing as a witness in court. That if you lied, whatever, if it was murder, whatever it was, it would be done to you. So, who else can testify? Well, gotta have two testifying the same fact. This is the problem at the trial of Jesus. Couldn't get two people to agree. They went on and on all night, and they couldn't get their stories to agree. Cannot be a child. Christ says to be greatest, you have to be as a child. That means foregoing the privilege of testifying on your own behalf. What did Christ do when he was before his accusers at his trial? He was silent. Because children couldn't testify. Must be a man. Couldn't be a woman. But who was the first to see Christ raised? Women. Think God was sending a message? But who, in being merciful to the other disciples, was then sent? The next people to see him alive were, besides the soldiers, of course, were Peter and John, two witnesses. They could be believed. Two men. Okay, must be of good moral character. And that, the rabbis understood to mean, could not be a tax collector. So Matthew couldn't testify in court. It must be a Jew and not a Gentile. It must be impartial. Can't have an interest in what's going on. So at the trial of Jesus, when the high priest couldn't get two people to agree, what did he do? Tore his robe. What did that mean? I'm not high priest now. I'm just Joe Blow. So that he could testify. And he provided the second witness. Peter and John were outside. They could have been the witnesses. And I think that's what John had in mind. But what Peter had in mind was taking charge and taking it away from John. And vice versa. So what happens when the lady comes out to bring them in to testify? Ask you, do you know the Galilean? Are you competent to testify? And Peter doesn't get it. John does, I think. Peter doesn't. Peter says, "I don't know who you're talking about. Thank you. You make your free to go." And then the light comes on for Peter, what he just did. They could have been the exonerating witnesses. So next is, if he does not listen, what do you do? So there's a burden in Israel of the watchman. And because they were subject to being invaded. And so if someone is appointed as a watchman, then he has a moral obligation to tell the rest of the assembly what's about to happen. And not doing so is it brings personal guilt on the watchman. So it makes sense to bring two people with you when you go to confront somebody, regardless, because even if you don't take them to court, you've got proof that you did what you were supposed to do. You gave them a chance to wise up. Okay. If he does not listen, tell it to the church. What's the church? Didn't have a church yet, right? Well, there was the distinction between the assembly, which was the whole country, all the Jews, and the church, which was a group of people gathered to worship. So Jesus is saying, bring this to the worshipers, tell it to the church, and basically he's setting up the courtroom. And then if he refuses to listen, let him be as a Gentile and a tax collector. Well, that means if he's a Gentile, he can't testify. He's a tax collector, he can't testify. Can't testify on his own behalf. So who is telling the story? It's the tax collector. I mean, this is almost like a joke, right? He's telling this, Matthew is telling the story himself. And I just picture all the disciples just cracking up. Oh yeah, treating like Matthew over here. You know, the obsessive compulsive guy, you know, whatever. And that was, how does Jesus treat tax collectors and sinners and Gentiles? Well, when Matthew was called, Matthew doesn't tell this story on himself, but the other gospel disciples do, that they threw a big party. Matthew was buying. Jesus went to the party. Does that sound like kicking somebody out? So, next is the binding and loosing thing. So the disciples were expecting that they would have a political office. And binding and loosing was something that was a franchise of the Pharisees. They did that. It was kind of like they could put a curse on something or remove a curse. And they could restrict its use, or they could take a person and exclude them, which is what happened to the guy who was healed of blindness, and Pharisees said, you're kicked out. They could do this. And the church kind of picked up on this. That's what the Pope reserves the right to do. That's how he got to be so influential. Pope Urban wanted to build a great big new St. Peter's. So he went to the German bankers and they said, I have this great idea. Why don't you sell get out of jail free cards? And that was get out of jail free cards. That's indulgences. That's take me. When the coin in the coffer rings, the soul from purgatory springs. And that financed St. Peter's. That's binding and loosing. So, and that's an idea that we have today. You've heard of derivatives? You know, that's what a derivative is. A derivative is taking something and turning it into money. So that's what Pope Urban did. He took the get out of jail card, turned it into money. And you do that with your house, which isn't money, when you mortgage it. You turn it into money, that's a derivative. Okay. The meeting of three. Two or three are gathered. Well, in the debt collection world, the Jews recognized something called the meeting of three. And the meeting of three was where somebody in the presence of another one, and the debtor, and the creditor, the three of them, it is agreed that the debt will be transferred to the third party. And the original borrower gets extinguished. What's about to happen? Christ is going to come, and there's going to be a meeting of three where he takes on the debt. So, what about binding and loosing? It is a way of taking on conflict and our obligations to each other, that Christ is taking that on. So when we go about binding and loosing, Christ is telling his disciples, don't go about this like the disciples, like the Pharisees did. This is your chance to turn an obligation into a blessing, which is what Christ was about to do. And that's what Christ does. The Jews understood the concept of jubilee, that every 70 years, all debts would be forgiven, all property would return to its original owners, meaning mortgages got canceled. And nobody wanted to lend money in that last couple of years. They didn't. We don't know if they ever followed jubilee, but here was the concept. And Moses says, do not be stingy in those last couple of years, because the poor you will always have with you. Okay? That's what Christ was talking about when he said that. And that was the idea that you would still be generous with people, knowing that in a few years or a few months or even a few days, that debt would disappear. And that's what Christ did. So I don't think that the two or more gathered is about Jesus floating over the couch when you have a prayer meeting. I don't even think it's about prayer meeting. I think it's about the debt that we owe that we cannot pay. It's about Christ the Redeemer and how different that was than the expectation of the Messiah who was going to come and bring a sword against the bad guys. Instead, he brought the sword against himself. And that was really hard for them to wrap their minds around, and us. Thank you very much. I'm done.